Okay, good morning. Well, so first of all, I would like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Li Yong. He's a senior researcher at the Ministry of Education Key Laboratory of Integrated Regulation and Resource Development on Chilo Lakes. That's a pretty long name for a lab at the Ohio University in Nanjing in China. And he has recently spent a very productive year with my group in Riverside. We published a couple of papers and 2 hours on this topic, which I will be discussing today. So this slide gives the outline of my presentation. So I will first give some background, and then I will briefly describe the field experiment and collected data. Then I will describe the Hydrus 1D modification that we had to do to be able to carry out the numerical analysis. And then I will give some selected results, first related to water flow to get the flow field, and then to nitrogen, and finally some conclusions. So rice is the most widely consumed staple food for a large part of the human population, especially in Asia, and it provides more than 1/5 of the calories consumed by humans worldwide. And China is one of the largest producers, accounting for about 30% of the world's production. And traditional method of rice cultivation is transplanted rice, but the human labor represents more than 50% of the cost for this traditional method of cultivation, and that's why there are new methods being developed or gradually are appearing, such as dry and wet direct rice seeding. And these methods provide an opportunity to save time and labor, and there is a gradual shift around the world from this traditional TPR method to DSR method. However, compared to this traditional method, the new methods, they require a different water and fertilizer management. For example, during the first 2 weeks after seeding, the requirement to have the flooded fields, the soil surface only has to be moist enough to allow the seed germination, and also there are various alternative drying and wetting cycles during the mid-season. So the experimental site was done by Dr. Li in Jiangsu province in the agriculture area close to the Taihu Lake Basin. And Taihu Lake Basin is located south of the Yangtze River, and it's a relatively large agricultural area, about 40,000 kilometers square, so it's like half of Czechoslovakia, where rice fields account for about 35% of that area. The basin has a subtropical monsoon climate with the average rainfall about 1,200 millimeters. Pan evaporation 800 millimeters and average temperature 15. So the dominant soil types in this area is classified as hydromorphic pedisols, and the experiment was carried out in 2 years of 2008 and 2009, and we used the data from 1 year to calibrate our model because we needed quite a lot of parameters to calibrate, and then we used data from another year to validate basically the model. The rice which was planted was Japonica rice, which was the seeds were broadcasted directly on the topsoil at 75 kilograms per hectare in June, and the harvest was in November, so growing season was 150 days. And the two seasons were quite different in terms of rainfall, so in one year we had only about 50 centimeter rainfall, and in another year about 100, and some of that water was replaced by irrigation. Well, here you see some photos from the experimental site. So you see that vertical soil profile, so it's very good clay soil. And then some preparation before the experiment, and then finally during the experiment itself. Okay, what data were collected? So first we had climate data, which were included daily values of temperature, wind speed, humidity, daily hours. Then the amount of irrigation water was measured by flow meters at the inlet, and the flooding water depth was measured every 2 days at multiple points in the field. Surface runoff was again measured using flow meters at the outlet, and then There were multiple flux lysimeters installed around the field, which measured the vertical water fluxes. And these flux lysimeters, they consisted of open cylinder of 25 centimeter diameter, which were located at a depth of 60 centimeters, and they were connected to a water bottle, and then the water volume in that water bottle was measured every two weeks. Then groundwater table was monitored, and tensiometers were installed at multiple locations again and multiple depths, and those measurements were taken every 2 days. With respect to nitrogen, so the total amount of nitrogen fertilizer applied was 220 kilograms, and it was applied in multiple applications. Then soil solution samples were taken at multiple depths using porous ceramic cups, and I believe that was done twice a week. Then we calculated nitrogen leaching at the depth of 60 centimeter, basically by taking the flux and multiplying by the nitrogen at that level. The same was done for the surface runoff, so we had outflow flux, which we multiplied by the concentration in the flood water. The ammonia volatilization was measured also, and then samples of plants were taken in multiple days and analyzed for nitrogen content and so on. Okay, and then we analyzed the data using the HYDROS model. And so, as you probably know, so this model can be used for 1, 2, and 3 dimensional simulations of flow and transport, but in this particular case, we use only 1-dimensional model. And the model allows to have different stratification. So in this case, we had, I believe, 4 different layers, for which we then calibrated different rate coefficients, especially for those various nitrogen transformations fluxes. Okay, in terms of processes, so we actually had to use most of the processes which HYDROS offers. So we simulated water flow, we used fungi-nuketane parameters, we simulated root water uptake. We didn't do preferential flow. In terms of solute transport, so we considered convective dispersive transport in the liquid phase, but also diffusion in the gas phase, because we modeled volatilization of ammonium. Then we modeled sorption of ammonium, and also nutrient uptake by plant roots. We considered heat transport because a lot of these rate parameters depend on temperature. And finally, we also used this inverse optimization option so we could calibrate the model against the experimental data. Okay, and here we simulated, well, HYDROS can be used to simulate single ions, multiple ions, particles, etc., different more complex systems. So in this case, we used this option to simulate multiple ions which are subject to sequential first order decay, and you see that chain for nitrogen, or chain reactions for nitrogen, which we used here. Okay, HYDROS allows users to use 2 types of atmospheric boundary conditions. So you can either have atmospheric boundary condition with surface runoff or with surface water layer or ponding, but you can have only one of them during one particular application. So for this applications, we had to modify HYDROS and to allow users to dynamically switch between these different types of boundary conditions, because sometimes you have ponding, sometimes you don't have ponding. And also we allow the user now to define the thickness of the water layer as a function of time to reflect those different management times which are used in these types of cultivation of rice. Okay, so now some inputs. So the potential evaporation, transpiration on the left, rainfall, irrigation on the right. So those are input into the model. And then some outputs. So here's the actual and cumulative transpiration and on the left, and actual and cumulative water fluxes. So you can see there already comparison between the model and the measurements. So those are fluxes at surface at depths of 60 centimeters. Then on the right, you can see surface water levels, both calculated and observed. And then the pressure heads, again, observed and calculated at 5 depths. And this is the result for the calibrated model, and so you can see quite good correspondence. With respect to nitrogen, so we were considering these transformation processes. So fertilization, hydrolysis of urea, mineralization of organic nitrogen, ammonia volatilization, nitrification of ammonia to nitrate, denitrification of nitrate, adsorption of ammonia, and rice root uptake. And most of these processes were considered as first order reactions, except for mineralization, which was zero order process. And here are some results. So here you see nitrogen concentration in flood water, both ammonium and nitrate, and then ammonia volatilization fluxes. So you see these sudden peaks after the applications of fertilizer, which are those arrows in the top, and then very quick decrease in this concentration. Nitrate concentration slightly lag behind ammonia because of nitrification. And you can see that the model could describe that quite well. But I need to emphasize that it was calibrated, right? So these are concentrations at different depths, again, both ammonia and nitrate. And again, quite remarkable correspondence between the model and observed data. Finally, the nitrogen plant uptake. And so here we simulated uptake both by ammonium as well as nitrate. For ammonium, we assumed that we can have passive and active, so we had to specify what is the demand, nitrogen demand by plants. But for nitrate, we simulated only only passive uptake. This is wrong here. So we calculated the overall uptake, then the conclusion was that about 75% of the uptake was in the form of ammonium, and we compared that with the literature. And finally, on the right, you see the nitrogen leaching of ammonia and nitrate, and you can see the deeper you go, so it's more and more dominated, obviously, by nitrate, as you would expect. Finally, this is the table which gives components of all these simulated and observed components of nitrogen balance for these 2 years, for both the calibration and validation year. And you can see that the mass balance at the end was very well closed by the model, which it should be. Right? So the fluxes which are here are fertilizer, mineralization, ammonia volatilization, denitrification, surface runoff leaching, crop uptake, change in soil storage, etc. And finally, the conclusion and summary. So we analyzed 2 years of data, a very complex system with complex geochemical reactions, and Hydrus was quite good in modeling that system, and so we could conclude that it's an effective tool. And I leave you with this cartoon at the end.
Thank you very much. Time for a quick question. Yes, Mira.
Thanks for this interesting talk. What do we define the nitrogen system, actually? And I guess you ignore the preferential flow. Yet, your comparison with the modern experiment comes up very nicely, very nice, actually. So is it because of the way you calibrate your model, you get the good map, or is it because preferential flow was not important in your guess?
Well, the preferential flow, these systems are flooded, right, most of the season, so there's water standing at the top, which kind of it makes it uniform overall, right? Preferential flow, there is very little preferential flow, otherwise you couldn't keep flooding at the surface, right? It's a perifuse, right, so there is a clay layer which kind of holds water in that system.
Just quick, yeah.
What is that?
What inputs can the crop itself
have? Yeah.
What inputs have you used?
Of
the crop itself.
Well, in this case, we simulated only the growth, like so the rooting depths with time, and then we specified transpiration to have the root water uptake, and then nutrient demand during the different stages of development to get the nutrient uptake. But we didn't simulate the crop itself, you know, like yield and...
We cannot hear you.
Well, we did simulate the rooting depth change during the season. Yeah. But that was the input. Yeah, so we didn't try to predict the crop itself.
Okay, thank you very much, Jirka.